Welcome to the Podcast Discovery Show, the podcast about other podcasts, where each week we take a deep dive into a podcast that we've recommended the week before, and we kind of discuss it in a book club style discussion. I'm Kirk.
I'm Zach.
And we have a special guest here.
Richie from Brands and Empires.
Yeah.
From Brands and Empires and our friend for a long time now.
Yep. It's been a minute.
12 years, 13
yeah.
years now?
It's been a long time.
No, 12 years since we graduated. We're talking.
Ooh, yeah.
We're coming up on 16 years now.
You're really dating us here on this episode.
Oh, by the way, yeah. You can edit that out for the masses.
No, it's okay. I accept it. I lean into it.
Yeah, so thanks for being here, Richie. But this week, we are going to be discussing the Moth Radio Hour. The episode in particular is War, Barbie Dreamhouse, Coco, and a Naked Man. And that's all the time we have, guys. That's such a long title that now we've run.
Yeah.
outro.
I do love that they made sure to say naked, in the title of it. It's not naked. It's naked.
Naked.
And I mean, they're not wrong. She does say it repeatedly, and it's naked.
So The Moth is, it's a show, it's kind of like a storytelling type show, but they always have storytellers tell a live story on stage. And it's really cool. It's like I said last week, it's kind of a mix between like Snap Judgment and Risk. So it's kind of.
Are these two different podcasts?
Yeah, they're two different podcasts. We've discussed them on our show previously. They're both storytelling podcasts. One of them is very kind of salacious stories in a way, Risk.
Yeah, the point of Risk is you tell a story that you think you would never tell anyone, but you tell it to an audience and on a podcast.
It's very intriguing, but some of the stories are nuts.
I mean, it was an awesome thing.
We saw it
live
in Tampa. It was
amazing.
Really cool.
Interesting.
And then Snap Judgment's one of my favorite shows, and they tell long form story, and they mix it with like music and stuff. They call it storytelling with a beat. That's one of my favorite shows.
It's This American Life with music. Underneath.
If I could recommend that show every week, I probably would.
So is there more planning going into that second show?
Oh yeah.
So it's scripted.
Yeah, it's not,
already
it's,
got the audio.
And not all the stories are true. I mean, it may be just like a good storyteller telling, maybe even something they wrote, as a narrative fiction. But this show is all true stories told by the person. And the first story, which was called Out on a Ledge, was by Phil Caputo. And he was a reporter and a war correspondent. And that was, I think, of all the stories in this one, I think that was my favorite one.
Yeah, I could definitely see – it was probably my favorite too. I think that they were all good and they were all different enough. It was very well curated as a group of stories. But that one, as a storyteller, he did an absolutely amazing job because I had no idea where this was going to end by where it started, because he started essentially with just like his life trying to break into journalism and trying to understand that in that competitive world and dealing with all that.
Yeah, I love the story about trying to get something unique about this murder that had happened in Chicago and him like scaling the fire escape to take pictures of the murder scene so that they – well, actually it wasn't pictures. It was get description of what was going on because the cops weren't letting anybody go in there. So he climbed the fire escape, wrote a bunch of stuff, called it in because this is back in the day. He like called it in on a payphone and someone else tried to do the same thing because they figured out what he did.
Yeah.
And he basically locked him in the fire escape so that he would miss his deadline.
Until the deadline ended,
It's brutal. It was a brutal world, apparently, of deadlines. But now the internet is here. And that's one thing that I definitely thought about throughout that story is
one cell phone would have changed everything.
Because it wouldn't be like, I'm going to call into my editor. It's like, I'm going to live stream this from my phone outside the window.
Can you believe this dude right now?
Yeah. It's just a different world. Yeah. And it's, I mean, still an amazing story, what they went through to try and get that immediate news that we just take for granted now. But it is different now.
At the same time, though, the landscape certainly changed. They were having to do these crazy hijinks and freeze each other out until the deadline passed. Nowadays, anybody and their mom with a cell phone is posting online.
Yeah,
everyone's stealing the glory. Yeah. You're not hearing about it from Reuters or Associated Press. You're hearing about it on Facebook Live, before anybody gets
It's really funny because as soon as any major event happens, every major publication is reaching out to people on social media.
Right.
They just see you posted a video on Facebook. They're like, hey, I work for Washington Post. Can we use your video? You know, they don't even have to
go through those links. Yeah, they're looking for interviews after the fact instead of like, hey, we're on scene delivering the new news. Right.
So it's crazy to see kind of the experiences they went through during that era. And I mean, there's great movies about that time and in reporting and things like that too. It's kind of just an interesting period piece, essentially, when you look back on how different it was than it is now.
Journalism sounds like something, at least back in the day, that would have been really fun to be in as like a single guy.
Fun and, you know what I mean? Fun and crazy. I mean, in Phil's case, also terrifying.
Well, yeah,
and
I mean, when he was a war correspondent, that's a whole different story. But like when we met Cal Fussman when he was working for Esquire, he was telling us about all of these other writers and stuff that he...
Yeah, he worked with Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah, and he would like go have beers and drinks with him after work. And it was just like all these crazy stories and how different things were then. And I don't know, journalism seems... like a very interesting thing back in the day. It was almost like a Wild West, you know, no rules.
Yeah.
And I mean, really, you could probably look into how the internet has impacted it now and figure out what these reporters have to do to try and beat news stories now. I don't even know how you can, but what's the new thing
that they have to do
to try and freeze out
their competitors or to get the scoop, you know? What's the new strategies that they have to employ?
It's probably also intense, but different. Who knows? But yeah, he started out that way, and then he gets into his entire career as, and he was also in the military. This was something she kind of dropped at the end that he was a successful writer and had served in the military. So he was in Vietnam, and then he also released a book called A Rumor of War in 1977, and it was a bestseller. It was also turned into a TV show.
I didn't know that.
How do we never hear about this guy?
I think it's more one of those things that he was kind of on the edges because he was like a reporter. He's toured a bunch of universities and he gives speeches and things like that. He's written a lot. He's written a lot of novels. He's written a lot of memoirs. He's written a lot of nonfiction. He's just a really good writer, really good storyteller.
Super prolific.
And it all started with his memoir of what it was like to serve in Vietnam.
Interesting.
And then he gets into... kind of his experience being a war correspondent, which that was something that I feel like it gets glazed over a little bit, especially because now I feel like there's less of it because of that same thing we were just talking about, where you don't have to, CNN doesn't have to send over 20 war correspondents because literally there's video coming out of these places. And you can kind of, they still will, but it's generally different.
Right.
And he was in, I think he said Beirut, right?
Yeah, that's what it was. And during, there was like was it considered like a civil war basically?
Yeah, because it was infighting between religions all in Beirut. So I think they did call it a civil war. And it was just, it just kept escalating. And also the whole story about the PLO general that kept getting interviewed, that was literally what was his name, Nick or Rick? Some guy named Rick that worked for another newspaper. Yeah,
so if you didn't listen to the podcast, In a nutshell, everybody's places back here, you know, their bosses were like, hey, you've got to interview one of these leaders and they're very dangerous people.
Yeah, they're not friendly. That's the whole – everything over there is not friendly right now.
And all these war correspondents are like, I mean, do you just want to take a cyanide pill? Do you just want us to die? Like, so what they did is one of the guys posed as a PLO leader and was interviewed by like – all of the different war correspondents over there. And they said that this fictitious guy was the most quoted PLO leader during the war. Because
nobody's quoting an actual PLO leader. And I mean, with good reason. I don't blame them at all. No. Like, how are you going to get an interview with somebody like that?
I do love how he was like...
not with both hands intact.
Yeah, for sure.
He's like, I'm glad you're laughing because this is very bad journalism.
Yeah, no, that's a huge no-no to just like... It's a lie. They made up a story in a war-torn region. Yeah, you
talk about fake news.
Yeah, right. No, that's actual fake news.
And these are mainstream news places that we're doing this,
like all of them, so...
Right.
Yeah, I get why he was like, I'm glad you guys are laughing because I felt weird. But then he got put into a situation where he felt like he had to make amends for that. And so he went to go try and get a real story and really investigate. And he was injured.
Yeah, he was shot. Yeah.
He got messed up.
But the thing that I took from that, when it was kind of his whole thesis specifically on that part of his story, was about just kind of how what he had seen in Vietnam and then what he had seen there had kind of created this he was desensitized to even feeling empathy for even victims. He said he talked about an example of he saw a bunch of people in line to get what, like food or something.
Yeah, they were going to get food,
getting bread or something
women,
like that.
Yeah, yeah, that's what really stood
like
out to me.
It was like 13 mothers who went to go get food,
and the Christians killed them, like blew them up. And his first thought was, "That's stupid
they shouldn't
for them
have been
to all
stacking
be together
up like that." Easy yeah. target,
easy
right.
target. And so he kind of spotlighted that as how callous he had become.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
After seeing so many horrible things, and then once he was shot, and he had to get surgery with no anesthesia.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, he went through something real too. And I mean, Vietnam also.
Yeah.
But yeah, like.
But he was talking about how, like, going through that experience, being shot himself and being a victim mm-hmm. of, you know, a war crime, it was, it brought him back to feeling empathy for those that are
victims. It resensitized him.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, brought it back to humanity. And I mean, I'll say this. We just gave our recap. Listen to him tell this story.
Oh, yeah.
He is a great storyteller. The whole time, I had no moment of this where I wasn't completely locked in and listening to him. And I can honestly say that for all of the stories on here, it really is a great experience to hear these people tell their stories. It's worth listening to them tell the stories. We're just trying to give you guys a recap because it is a great show and we had a great time listening to it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that was a big takeaway for me was listening to these stories. I was just right in the middle of a work day. So I wasn't anticipating to laugh or to have a tear brought to my eye. And on each of these stories, they were great, adept at pulling out emotion. You know, mm-hmm. here I am, I'm right in the middle of printing an order and I've got like, you know, tears streaming down my face. I'm like, nobody's looking at me right. You know, it's just, it was one of those. It was yeah. fantastic. It was very moving.
I mean, I got to ask, which one's the movie? Was it the next one? The one about the car accident? That one was pretty intense.
It certainly wasn't Trisha Rose Burt with her naked man.
That was just funny.
that was just
good. And Coco the dog too. But yeah, I think it was probably this next one, and that'll just lead us right into
the accident for sure. Yeah,
the accident, and it was is it Ophira?
Yeah,
Ophira Eisenberg, and this one is just intense because on a lot of levels, there's a lot going on because essentially what happened is there was a major car accident with a mother, her both daughters.
It was her and her brother. It was her and her brother. And then they had
a friend,
both of their friends. There was two kids. One died. One did not.
I thought it was the mother, the two daughters and the girlfriend.
Oh, you're right. It may have been two daughters. I'm not sure.
Because it was... Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, at least the other sister was around.
Something.
I just
remember whichever one was in the hatchback got out unscathed.
Yeah.
That was kind of.
But essentially, there was a horrific car accident.
Yeah.
And the mother was extremely injured. One of the daughters was extremely injured. One was, I think, mostly okay. And then one ended up, the friend, so not even one of the direct family members, ended up passing away from this car accident.
Right. And didn't wake up.
And
they were just like going to the pool.
It was nothing.
It was just like what you do in the summer. You
Some
know?
Non-errand.
I'm going to go hang out with my friend and we're going to go to the YMCA.
Yeah.
Something small.
That everybody's experienced, you
such
know.
Such a horrible tragedy.
And Ophira was 8 years old at the time. And so, okay, so then you have this layer of this is her processing what was happening as an 8-year-old girl, mm-hmm. you know, as a child. And you also get the layer of the mother experiencing this, which is essentially, that is a nightmare situation.
Right.
That is the worst thing that could happen to you is someone else's child is in your car. Like, and I don't know. It's just, it was all terrible. But essentially the story is she was in the hospital mm-hmm. and she had to go in for surgery and she was afraid. And her father said, hey, you're going to go to sleep for a little bit. But when you wake up, you can have whatever you want.
I'll buy you anything that you want was the line.
And she settled on a Barbie dream house. And that, to me, that is just another one of those, it hits you in like the heart because you're like, oh, it's a child,
yeah.
you know, it's just a little girl. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just so sad. And so she did all of this and she kept asking about her friend. And then she found out that her friend had passed away and she couldn't process it. And then she jumps forward in time to, she kind of, where did she tell this story originally? Was it on this show?
No, she was telling the story on tour for several years.
Oh, okay, that's what it was.
Deal.
And the father ended up hearing her tell her story.
The father of the
little girl that died in the car accident heard the story
mm-hmm.
and emailed her. And I can't even imagine the feeling of seeing that email in your inbox.
Yeah, like, how do you process that?
Yeah.
Well, before that, she was snooping around as a 16-year-old in her house, and she found a letter that was written to her mom from the dad saying, look, I know that this is an extremely horrible, difficult situation. I've lost my child, but I want you to know that I don't blame you. Because it was a complete freak accident.
Yeah.
You know, just a young kid ran a stop sign and hit them. And so it was, I don't know, I thought about so many things about this story. Like, what if I was the dad? What if I was
the other side of
the person driving the car? Like, I put myself in every one of those positions, and no matter where I mentally put myself, it was very
difficult. It all just hurts.
No matter what.
I felt like there were so many layers of the onion on that one. So it starts out, she's talking about, you know, we're going to the pool. We're going to have a good time. And then all of a sudden this happens. And she did such a good job explaining her innocence.
Yeah.
She told the story from, you know, this is all the things that are happening. They're telling me that I'm strong. Well, why am I strong? And then all of a sudden her sister's not there. And then they peel back when she's 16, the note to her mom. And all of a sudden she has the realization that her mom went through something. And how on earth did she stay so strong through all of this? And her dad was a rock through all of it. And she did a great job of just showing each person's perspective through this entire event, and then connecting with the father of the girl who got killed, and that he didn't harbor any of that hate and frustration.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, the strength of that man to be able to work through that empathetically.
Yes.
You know, to be able to understand that this is something that she will always carry.
Right.
As well.
You know? Yeah, I mean, because I kept thinking about, like, if I was the one that lost my kid and they were with someone else, there's just such a natural tendency to want to blame somebody.
Somebody's at fault. Somebody's got to pay for that.
But it's also a perfect opportunity for someone's character to come out in a good way or a bad way. That's the thing. Right. It's like, his came out in a way of grace. You know, he understood that it was a complete accident. And you know what I mean? It was just such a crazy story.
It is a wild story to kind of like process all this. Because also, when my truck got totaled, I literally almost T-boned a 16-year-old kid.
Oh, man.
And it was completely his fault. I was driving 50 miles an hour, and he just didn't look my direction at all. He was trying to turn left, so he had to cross a lane, and he was crossing my lane, and he looked right and then just turned.
Oh, boy.
And so I was driving 50 miles an hour. He pulled out directly in front of me. I still remember to this day his face as he turned and saw what was about to happen. And I like slammed on brakes and I just like pulled the wheel as hard as I could. It could have been really, really bad. We ended up hitting like my front right on his front left because I swerved. Because like I literally was looking into this kid's eyes going 50 miles an hour at his door. Like I would have hit this kid. And so I just swerved, just like instinct. I just tried to not hit his door. And so we hit my front right, their front left. We hit and then slammed the cars together, like sandwiched them.
Clapped instead of
and
just
then clapped,
arms. Yeah.
And then went across the street into the ditch. And it was I was hearing this, I was like, that could have been me. And it wouldn't have been my fault. And I would have killed a 16-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And so it's like
carried that no matter what.
Yeah,
you have a lifetime to think about that. Absolutely.
Even knowing it was his fault, it still would have been something that would have haunted.
Yeah, no, I can still see his face, even though everybody was fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I can still see his exact face when he saw me.
Oh yeah, I've been in a couple of serious car accidents, and it's wild how
time
it happens instantaneously. But it's like you've got freeze frames of each individual moment of boom, 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 and I mean it's just pure instinct and reaction, and then it's done, and you're either messed up or you're not.
Yeah,
you know.
It really does. And I mean, this story, it definitely shows you that like sometimes it's just like fate, destiny, luck, unluck, whatever you want to call it. You know, there's some element of randomness to how this all goes because all of us have been in car accidents and this is not our story.
Right.
But it was an incredible story to listen to. And this was one where I was like, oh man, I'm feeling things. I wasn't really
I wasn't expecting this.
I didn't go into it with any expectations. Yeah, yeah. I just listened to it. You know, I just put it on and listened to it. But this one, I was like, oh man, so much I'm thinking about right now.
When she brought up the kid in the back of the hatchback, it reminded me when I was like six, there was a family that went to our church and they were the mother and the three kids. She had the oldest daughter was sitting up front. The youngest daughter was still in her baby bassinet, and the son was in the back seat of it was a Dodge Caravan, and they were going to take a look at a home showing because they were planning on moving. And I mean, I'm 5 or 6. The son was my good friend. He was 6, 7. He was about 10 months older than I was. And I remember hearing about all this after the fact, but she pulled out into traffic, and it was her fault. She pulled out into traffic, wasn't paying attention. There was a guy that was drunk driving, but he was going like 70 in a 45. So she didn't gauge the distance. The speed. He T-boned him, and the son was in the back of the van, but laying sideways like you would in the back of a hatchback.
I did it all the time.
And he just, his brains got scrambled because, you know, the side of the car hit it. And I mean, as soon as they were saying that about the hatchback, it just, I hadn't thought about that in 25 years. And just immediately, it was right there all of a sudden, you know, because your good friend's gone and just all of the stuff that came out of this. Yeah. And then I remember, you know, the whole family was just was devastated. You've got these people whose lives were perfectly put together. They're always on time. They're early. And then just this serenity, this quietness that came over the entire, well, the whole church body.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing. I feel like everybody can relate to that. Sudden terrible loss, yeah. You know, and so it's one of those things that this is just another great story. Once again, go listen to her tell this story. Listen to this episode; yeah. It really is a great episode.
Yeah, if you want to feel some feels, that'll definitely pull them out of you.
And all over the place. You know, it really, like, don't worry, you're not going to cry the
highs
whole time.
And lows. Yeah, I think they were not a good
very
note. I think
very intentional with their placement of the story.
They built an arc. Yeah, they go from here to down to up, and then they leave you on a middle note for sure.
Yeah. So this is the moment of sadness where you need to think about life and
low
feeling
point of the evening.
Yeah, you need to feel things and experience things, but then it moves to something that's less experience based and more hilarious.
Yeah.
And we actually get to thank a Florida woman for this story.
Yeah, she's from Tampa.
She's from Tampa, right?
She was. I caught that. I was like, oh, born and raised in Tampa. Okay.
So she moved up north. So
yeah.
She said, disowned us.
She said she had Nashville roots, and then she moved north. I don't know what the Nashville roots mean. I don't know.
Those roots ran really deep because people in Tampa don't sound like she does.
Yeah, no, that... Yeah, she sounds very Southern. I haven't heard a lot of people here that sound that
You've heard
strong.
Of Chandra Pierce? She's like a real Southern comedian. This girl reminded me exactly of that woman.
But yeah, her entire perspective was going from a successful corporate executive and then branching out into artistry. I guess that's in a nutshell. But yeah, her once again, listen to the episode because her telling the story makes it.
Yeah, Trisha Rose Burt. Mm-hmm. And her story was called How to Draw a Naked Man.
And then, I like that.
He brought out the Florida man voice for us.
But yeah, so she was coming from, like you said, an executive background, basically. And then she was very driven. She was very data heavy in everything that she did. Mm-hmm. She had goals. She had, you know, things like that. And she wanted to hit benchmarks. And she goes in this creative world. And they're like, this class, there's no grades. We're not focusing on the art that you're going to make. We're focusing on the process
yeah,
of the art.
I think that was the quote. Is like, we're not concerned about the end result. We're going to teach you the art making process, right. And that blew her mind.
She immediately started like panicking.
There was any teaching; it was more just like exploring your natural roots, right? Because there was no right or wrong in the whole situation.
No, there wasn't. It was more just like we're gonna make art together,
explore it,
and that's it.
And she tells this hilarious story of, I think it was like 2 weeks into her class, they're doing this. They were supposed to draw the essence of a naked man. So they had this model come in, stripped down, and he was going to pose for like 45 seconds or something like that. Was it like 45
seconds?
Had to
be longer
than
45 seconds.
Each pose was an hour.
His stances, yeah.
And I loved how she's like, and I kept drawing stick figures, and I felt like a failure every 45 seconds, which is a lot.
It's 80 times.
it was great. It's such a great story. And then she talks about like, the teacher, she's like, multiple times I just wanted to cry. I just wanted to just give up and cry. But the teacher came over and she's like, look, you're doing great. You know, this is it. You're doing.
No, there's no wrong either.
You're doing the process.
Yeah.
Right.
There's no wrong. So doing
she was like
it,
talking to the person next to her, like, what is it supposed to look like? And they're like, all these are going to look different.
What do you mean? Yeah.
Yeah. This definitely made me think of all of us have at some point kind of dove into creative outlets. Mm-hmm. Did you guys ever have this experience? Because I definitely remember that, like, when I first started writing at all, you know, I was like, I just appreciated it. And I was like, I want to write like a screenplay. And then there was this moment where you sit down at your computer and you're like, Now what?
Right.
Where it's like, what is this supposed to be? Uh-huh. Where do I start? Where do these pieces go? And I ended up getting a bunch of books and like reading through it and then kind of like took that as notes, but didn't want to take it as gospel, mm-hmm. if that makes sense, where it's, I didn't want to follow a formula. I wanted to get general sense, like here are some things that are good practices and things like that. But then once you kind of get past that first hurdle of
starting,
where like looking at an empty page is daunting. Mm-hmm. If you sit down to write a screenplay, looking at that page and just, okay, so what's my first line? You know, there's a lot of intimidation around starting, about diving into something. Did you guys ever have anything like that?
It was a dark and stormy night. No.
Yeah, I mean, you could go that route.
Right, yeah. No, but it, just even in the art world, having a blank artboard, that is the most daunting stage of being in Photoshop or Illustrator when you're looking at this whiteboard and you've got nothing to go on. You can't edit, tweak, add, it's just, there's nothing there. Same thing. And I've started writing short stories and things like that, so I totally feel you. How do you outline this? Do I start with a story, a backstory, a framework? You know, you're right. And you don't know where to go from there.
The best place to go is wherever it goes. You know, that's the thing. Really, just do. Just, it's, and I feel like I've read a couple things where people just say, you know what, it can be terrible. Don't worry about that. Just do it.
And I've seen some published works that are truly terrible.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, well, if they can do it,
I can put it on. And honestly, it's draft. Your first one is a draft.
Yes.
You're gonna throw it out, you know, because you've been writing for Florida Man too. You know, there's times where you just have to lean into, it's just a draft. Right. It's just start writing and things will change, or start working on whatever your design's going to be. You know, you have to just start somewhere. You might trash the whole thing. It doesn't matter. The best way to start anything is to just start it.
Yeah. I think that's the thing that I think of, is the mental hurdle of getting started. You always try to overanalyze. You want when you start to be good. You're like, well, I want to be the best when I start. That's just not the way it works most of the time.
No, I mean, I've probably talked about it on the show before, but that quote from Ira Glass, have you heard this?
Probably, but I don't remember it.
It's, Ira Glass essentially says, paraphrased, I'll link it somewhere because it's worth listening to. Everybody who gets into an artistic outlet of any kind has better taste than they have ability when they start.
Right, absolutely.
So you have much better taste than you're able to execute on. But everyone starts there because you have to practice. These are things you develop. So you start out and you can't get discouraged by the fact that you're not writing like your favorite writer, or you're not designing like your favorite designer, or you're not doing any of these creative outlets as well as the people who inspired you to get into it.
Yeah, right.
You have to go through this process just as they did before you. Mm-hmm. And I'll link it.
It's easy to identify good is what it sounds like, but trying to identify what made it good and how to recreate and deconstruct it.
And also find your voice, you know, your personal voice. That's how you put yourself out there through your work.
Right.
That is a challenging goal. It's a challenging goal in general. It's something that I personally also believe that everyone can be creative. It's intimidating to do it, but I think that it's rewarding if you try. You know, it doesn't have to be any specific thing, but I think that's rewarding to have a creative outlet, to find some way to express yourself and just like purely, you know, something that's purely creative and coming just straight from your soul. And it is daunting, but I think that it's worth it. And so she's telling this hilarious story about like, oh, there's this naked guy standing in the room and I don't know what I'm doing. And like, but I just kind of picked up on all her, she was so used to the structure of corporate world of, we need to see X result. Here are all the numbers. Tell us what they mean. You know, everything's very structured and rigid.
Right.
And then you get into this world that it's
completely there are no rules.
Yeah. What do you want it to be? Mm-hmm. And then it comes down to something very deeply introspective. So it's something that's, there was a lot, to me, there was a fun layer on this because it was so funny hearing her talk about all this, and her accent's amazing. And she kept saying naked. And then there's just this layer of things that were so relatable with like kind of that first journey into creativity.
Yeah. And like I'm in a bunch of different podcasting groups and there's so many people that are wanting to start something. And I've seen so many people be asking them for advice. They get all worked up on the tools, the mics, the recording devices and stuff. And they always are asking for people advice. And people are always giving the worst advice.
Right. The keyboard jockeys that have no podcast ability of their own. Right.
And sure. I mean, we have a small show, but we've been doing this for long enough that we've kind of figured some stuff out. We know what we learned what not to do by doing it.
We feel confident. We feel confident saying that our show is better now than when we started.
One day you guys will actually launch the podcast discovery show.
200 episodes in, we still haven't launched the show. We're working on it.
No, but yeah. So my advice is always just start.
Yeah.
Even if you don't release it yet, start recording. Hit record somewhere.
Just press record. Yeah, either on video or on
Hilariously,
your microphone.
I found out just the other day, my first episode of Creators Cove, I talked to Hollis Brown, and he was like, oh, I've thought about doing a podcast and interviewing musicians that I know. And I'm like, do it.
The Musician Discovery Show, done.
Yeah, I was like, just record it. And he has a podcast.
Does he really?
What? Well, now you're the podfather.
The podfather.
I have a pod grandchild out there now. And oh, no. No, but it's – no, he has a great show because he's actually famous. And he talks to like actual musicians like that are really high level and everything.
I'm sure that opens up more doors for him.
Yeah,
too,
it definitely does because it's people that he tours with and things like that. But I literally just told him like, don't worry about it. Doesn't – like he was worried about like, oh, I don't know how much time I need between – episodes or how long I should make a season. I'm like, nobody is gonna actually care. Just start,
just release,
just do you.
That's
you
know? The beauty and the you know danger of podcasts is that there's no rules.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, you make your own rules. It's it's fun. It's fun. But yeah, so that brings us to the last story, which it was I think the shortest of them, but it came from what they called their story slam. Is that what they called it?
Yeah, and the one before too, correct?
Yeah.
Was that part of the same episode? They kind of blurred together after a while. What was Coco about?
Coco is about a very special dog that they found at the pound.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
I remember Derpy dog.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what I call it.
It sounds just ridiculous, but I think it was just old. I think it was just a really old dog. So the story is Carlos Kotkin.
Yeah.
Carlos.
Carlos.
We'll call him Carlos.
Carlos goes to the pound, and they see a messed up looking poodle.
Now, why did they go to the pound in the first place? Because he made it sound like they had no intention of getting a
dog. I'm wondering if they were browsing. You know what I mean? First of all,
he said that him and his dad, that's what they did every now and then.
Just something to do.
They would just go play with the dogs, take them out. And,
right. I get that, but I can't do that. That is a dangerous game for me. I don't want a dog right now. And if I see
listen to the story, this is the reason it's a dangerous game.
Because the girl that was there was like, oh, you like that little dog over there? And they're like, oh, yeah,
I hope
so cute.
You do.
Yeah, well, I hope you like him enough because in 10 minutes he's getting ready to be put down. They're like, what do you do, you know?
No, and that's why I won't go there because I know what I would do. I would have Coco too.
Yeah.
I would have to deal with this dog. And so they get Coco home and apparently Coco's kind of weird looking. Coco is slightly odd in general, has weird bathroom habits.
So they wouldn't go to the bathroom outside. It would just stay on the concrete and go in the cracks.
Which is the worst possible way to do it. Like, then they tried to adopt Coco out because Coco is Coco.
And nobody wants him.
No, somebody took Coco. And then they get called from the pound the next week saying your dog's here.
Because they took it back to the pound.
We don't have a dog. We give him away.
That's the worst. Who just takes it back to the pound?
So granted, it's probably because of the name of the dog, but I immediately visualized the dog from
Coco.
Because it's such a derpy looking dog and his like tongue's always hanging out and stuff. Oh, no. So yeah, that was my visualization. But they ended up taking the dog back again.
No, because it was like friends with him now.
Like
they tried
to
leave. They were about to
and
leave.
He knew. Yeah, he knew.
And then it barked at him. And he says the only time he ever heard Coco bark was them leaving. It's like, no. So, but it ended up being like, it was an old dog, you know. Coco only lived for like another year after they had adopted her, or him, I don't know.
Who knows what they're feeding her, though?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was an older dog when they got Coco, and that's probably why Coco was due to being euthanized. But like, in the end, that was a year given, you know. That was a cool thing, you know.
Right. And I love how he wraps it up, because the premise for that story slam was persuasion. And they were talking about how the lady at the pound persuaded them to get Coco.
Highly effective.
Yeah, we're going to kill this dog in 10 minutes.
Oh,
you want to take it home, right?
Sell me this pin. Yes, sell me this Coco.
That's why I can't go. Because if anybody ever said, if I was ever in a situation, I think just generally in life, you see this dog is about to die in 10 minutes unless you take him. Like, man, give me the dog. Like,
I hate to say it, but like, I could be in a situation like that. They're like, we'll put all these dogs down, you know, if you don't want to take them. I'd be like, you know what? That would be like 4 years, 5 years of absolute misery. It would be difficult for me because I weigh decisions out that far in advance.
So you're saying you'd be fine like, Well, no. Kill the dog.
I mean, it wasn't my responsibility.
Just
but
kill
you know,
that dog.
No, I would
kill it.
I'm kidding.
I would not push the button. I wouldn't push the red button. You know?
What is that, Schrodinger's cat or whatever?
Yeah. No, like, you know, the pain experiments where they...
Just close the box.
I just don't want to.
As long as I
don't
see
open
it.
Don't open it. Don't close it.
It's
but
not
don't open
dead
it.
Unless you open the box.
Oh, no.
No, but it was... They ended on kind of just like fun and light. So I really do think they had a great arc. Sounds great. Storytelling is fantastic. It's a really great show, and you should check it out. And Richie was actually saying that he dug into some more episodes afterwards.
I did.
That's why he got confused a few times, because he listened to more than just this one.
Yeah, I let like 30 stories roll one after the next. It was like 5 hours of the Moth Radio Hour, and then we were finally going to get dinner together. My wife's like, "What is this?" And she turns off. It was the middle of this girl's coming out story, and she's like, "What is this?" I was like, "I'm sorry, babe."
It's like, okay, we'll turn it off.
It's not what it sounds like.
I'm deep in the show right now.
Yeah, I'm laughing, I'm crying.
But yeah, fantastic show, awesome recommendation.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's very one of those show that I have so many in my rotation, but this one's going to end up being in my rotation as well.
Yeah, it's
there's a lot of meta stuff going on. Like, you guys are referencing other podcasts that I've never even heard of, but they sound pretty interesting. What are your top three right now?
Top three podcasts right now? Ooh, that's tough.
I mean, I can do it.
Top three shootout.
Mine is for sure Snap Judgment. That's one of my favorite ones. Okay. One of my favorite ones that I found recently is the Florida Man show. It's made out of Lakeland. And
really?
It's so good. They start with, I mean, we already reviewed them on the PDS, but they start with a Florida Man stories, a few, just like two or three news stories, funny, goofy news stories, whatever, you know. But then they talk a little bit about like their personal stuff, you know, they're a lot like us. That's what's funny is their upbringing. They went to a private school in Lakeland. they did the stupid stuff that you do when you're a small school and no one really cares. And so I relate to their stories, but then they always bring a Florida centric real story. They talk about Robert the Doll, which is some like doll that's supposedly haunted in Key West, or they talk about some historical guy that, you know, built a fort and so, but it's always an intriguing story. Like they do the Monkey Island, which was up in Silver Springs, which now there's wild monkeys in Silver Springs because of this guy that thought it was a good idea to have
to
a tourist trap
island. What?
He had monkeys on an island. Oh, monkeys can't swim. They immediately swam off the island.
It really
just went wild.
It's this like what's happening in Florida.
Yes. Yeah. In Silver Springs, which is only 2 hours away, you will find random monkeys.
I feel like, can
and
you
they
not
all have like, what is it? Like, herpes or something?
Yeah. No, they do.
People are getting bit all the time because they're like, oh, look, a monkey. And then it bites them as they're trying to pet
it. I mean, can you not Google?
That doesn't even sound like a good idea.
No, can you not Google if monkeys can swim? I don't think that's like a complicated thing to do.
This was a pretty early thing.
Before Google. It was before Google.
Oh, okay.
And at the same time, they were like, they filmed a bunch of like Tarzan movies out there in near Ocala and stuff like that.
I thought all that stuff happened in like India.
Yeah, it's crazy. No, Ocala.
Ocala. It's Florida, man.
But yeah, it's a really good show. And then my third, I would say, would be probably Lore. That's still one of my favorite shows, Aaron Mankey's show. It's a, for you, Richie, it's a, he focuses on something that we see like in pop culture. I'll take it from this, like werewolves.
Okay.
It's a lore, but there's history to it. Where did it come from? Where did this idea of a werewolf come from?
The true roots and history from where this got started. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it may not be something that's actually real, but you talk about what was the reality. And actually, it's very interesting. Like in France, this guy was using it basically as a defense for murder. He was murdering people, and he's like, I turn into a wolf, and I just kill people.
That's the actual
and so
historic
reference. It's a crazy story.
I had no
idea. He actually started his show. He used to write fiction. Self-published. He started his podcast. Now he's making six figures with his podcast. His podcast got picked up, and he's got two seasons on Amazon Prime of the show, like in a visual format.
So they just created like a TV format based on his audio.
Yeah, he's been extreme.
Wow.
He is the poster child for the success.
I mean, but that
of
seems
a
like a really good thing. It's right
awesome
up there with, you know, Ancient Aliens and everything else like that on History Channel. Mm-hmm. I could see that being a show, obviously.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
So those are my three.
Your three, quick.
One of them I don't want to say because I kind of want to recommend that. It won't be a surprise.
Uh-oh.
It's like a new one.
Uh-huh.
It's like a new
intrigue.
One. But This American Life, always on the list. Like, I've never listened to an episode of that I did not like. Hardcore History, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Great show.
So good.
You know what? I'm going to throw Song Exploder on there. That's a... Okay, so Have you heard of Hardcore History? Basically, mm-hmm. super deep dive into history. But
and they only post like one episode every eon.
But mm-hmm. it's like 8 hours usually. And like it's from a great perspective. It's not the stuff you learned in history class. It's all the other stuff that makes it interesting. Right. It's a great show.
And the research that goes into it is nuts. That's why it takes so long. Because he reads like 15 books on the subject.
Wow, it's absolutely crazy. They deserve to be as popular as they are. And then Song Exploder, he gets with an artist every week or whenever he releases, and he breaks down a song and the process on it, the sampling on it. He really digs into the creation of a song and breaks it down, and it's awesome.
Huh. So, like, he takes the instruments and who was behind it and who directed it and who wrote it?
Yeah, it really depends on which episode he's doing, because, like, if they're sampling something, then he'll get into how they sampled things and things like that. But if somebody just wrote a song, he'll talk to him about the process and he'll talk to him about how they wanted to build out a song. He really just loves how song creation happens and has a really awesome show.
The closest I got to that was watching Straight Outta Compton, where I saw Dre do his, like, you know, thing on the keyboard.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, it was.
It's basically Song Exploder. No, it's not. No, it's a good show, though. It's a great show.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, and of course, we've found so many awesome indie shows, you know, independent small shows that are fun.
That's not all the shows I like.
Yeah, but I mean, those are just the three
that came to mind.
I wanted to throw out three that I could always go if I don't have something else. Like, because we do a lot of like discovering, like trying to find something new to listen to or something interesting, and I like a lot of them. But if it's one of those things, like I don't know what I want to listen to, I can throw on either of those, three, and I'm good.
Those are the ones that we trust enough to, no matter what the episode is, you don't have to go through and find, oh, this one looks interesting. You just put the next episode on. You're like,
yeah.
Huh. I didn't think I was interested in that, but now I am.
Very cool.
And I've learned something on most of them.
I'd say mine, though, in order of most important, clearly, the podcast Discovery Show.
Clearly.
Number one ever. And then
the best show ever made.
And then number three, Bigger Pockets Podcast.
Sure.
It's all about home buying and selling and flipping that whole industry. And then I really like Jordan Belfort, the Wolf of Wall Street's podcast. When you talk about somebody who knows selling.
I cannot believe he has a podcast.
I didn't think he did either. You know, I actually hadn't listened to any of his stuff until Meet Kevin, who is a real estate agent. He's like in his early, mid-20s. He broke down an interview between Grant Cardone, who is a real estate mogul, big-time guy, and Jordan Belfort. And I had been listening to Grant Cardone's stuff. And then Jordan Belfort literally just hamstrung this dude on his podcast inadvertently. And the dude just imploded and melted. You know, obviously everybody's seen the Wolf of Wall Street movie.
Yeah.
But then to listen to this dude's podcast, I was like, this guy's the real deal. So, of course, I got his sales thing and got into it. And it's very effective training. But,
That's awesome.
3, 2, 1. That's my list.
Well, I guess that brings us to next week's recommendation. And this is one that I had not listened to before and kind of dug into and found it. And it's really interesting.
I'm excited.
This is called Proof by America's Test Kitchen. And if you guys haven't heard of that, that is a PBS cooking show.
Yep.
And they've been on for like 20 seasons.
Yeah.
They really are in depth on the process of refining recipes and teaching people how to do it. It's a really cool channel. YouTube channel's great. Show's great. They put out recipes. They put out a lot of stuff. And they put out a podcast called Proof.
Huh.
And what it is they break down different kind of historical reasons for different like food elements. So the ones I'd like to recommend, and I have two because it's like 30, and then there's a bonus episode that was interesting. It's about 16. So it's like still 45 like 45.
Minutes. Yeah.
Okay.
But they're very different. And so that's why I thought it was cool. So the first one is prepping for the worst. And that is why people started having long shelf life foods, why they started storing them, the process of making high shelf life foods, a lot of stuff. You guys are going to like it.
Okay.
Second one, what weird things did the presidents eat? Self-explanatory.
Okay.
And yeah.
I love food stuff and I love hearing about history. So these two come together.
It melds it perfectly. Food and history.
A beautiful baby about food.
You can't spoil any of the baby. Foods that were weird that the presidents ate.
No, you got to listen to it.
I mean, Lincoln ate a bullet, that's pretty weird, right?
Like, I mean, it's weird. It's weird and it's unusual. Only two presidents have eaten that.
That's true, yeah.
No, three, because Reagan got shot too. Okay, this is all too dark. We're going to have to cut this from the actual show. You're welcome, YouTube. Enjoy that.
One weird trick.
I'll drop one. Jefferson used to make what he called, I can't remember what he called it, a booze loaf or something. It's something ridiculous. He would soak a baguette and red wine until it was like mush. And they put macaroni and cheese on it.
Ooh.
It's like, gross, dude.
Who was this?
Jefferson.
He would do what? Okay, say
Thomas,
those words
Thomas
again.
Jefferson.
Yeah, but say those words
He
again.
Would soak a baguette in wine.
Did they have macaroni and cheese like soon after the American Revolution?
Is this Yankee Doodle, right?
I remember hearing about like him being one of the first ones with wet macaroni and cheese. It's like some weird, one of the presidents.
And it's not Kraft macaroni and cheese. Like it wasn't yellow.
It's noodles.
It was noodles with cheese on it. Yeah, like it was Parmesan cheese. Like
how did he microwave it? Like
yeah. So, but that's one example of something weird that they're eating. But there's a lot more. They break it down. But yeah, really fun show. You learn a lot, and it's really interesting. And America's Test Kitchen is great. Well, check that out too.
Huh.
And remember,
there's always more to discover.
Thank you for listening to the Podcast Discovery Show. We have a few things we'd like to tell you. First, we would love to hear from you on Twitter at the PDS Official or in our Facebook group, the Podcast Discovery Club.
Secondly, leaving a rating and review on iTunes helps tremendously in giving us visibility and also visibility to the podcast that we recommend. You can also check out our Patreon page to get exclusive bloopers, old episode archives, and other exclusive content while supporting the show.
Finally, seriously, get in touch. We'd love to hear from you about what you love about podcasts. And thank you for being a part of all of the things that we do.
This was a podcast from the Podfix Network. You can check out more shows like it at podfixnetwork.com.